Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen in. Previously on The Rundown with Marianne Hogan.
Fighting through all of that and kind of just keeping your mental game on so that you're moving regardless of what pace you can move. And I think fighting through all the aches and pains for a third place finish was a very good moment for me, and I'm really happy that I pushed through all of that. And most importantly, it was a moment that I was really happy to be able to share with my friends and family, and that they also helped me push to that level, and I am very proud of that.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke with endurance athlete and suicide prevention advocate Lynn Keene. She loved running in school and was competitive on the track before taking a long hiatus from the sport, coming back at age 39. Running and triathlon remain a huge part of her life. It helped her to grieve over the tragic loss of her child and allowed Lynn to find a path forward, showing tremendous perseverance and resilience. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. I was looking for a tasty, vegan-friendly alternative to traditional gels, and Exact Energy Bars passed the test. Now available in Canada and the US, you'll definitely want to try them on your next long run. And they're offering you 15% off your order when you use the promo code LORUNDOWN. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today. In this week's news, as we gear up for the fall race season, there have been many big announcements regarding elite participation in upcoming marathons. Most recently, U.S. Olympian Galen Rupp will be towing the line at his first ever New York City Marathon. An American has not won that race since Meb Keflezighi back in 2009. North of the border, Canadian marathoner and record holder Melindy Elmore will be racing at this year's Toronto Waterfront Marathon. Coming off huge performances at the Tokyo Olympics and Boston Marathon, she may be in a prime position to better her record and post yet another personal best. Should be exciting to watch either way. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this event, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run.
This week's episode comes with a content warning. This conversation involves earnest discussion of depression, suicide, and grief. Discussing mental health is important, but so is self-care. So please exercise caution if these topics may be triggering for you. Stay safe, take care, and keep running.
Every November, I grow a mustache in support of Movember. It's something I've been part of for the last 4 or 5 years, usually tie it to some kind of endurance challenge or whatnot, whatever brings people out and gets the community moving. But it's a really important topic. It's one that I've learned a lot about in raising awareness for cancer, suicide prevention, and mental health. And mental health isn't just something that we should discuss in the month of November, but all the time. And my next guest is a big advocate for that. She's also an endurance athlete. She's a public speaker, done a whole lot of stuff and work within that space. So I'd like to welcome to the show Lynn Keene.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been, I think we connected a little while back, and I always like to keep those connections because there's a time for all these conversations. And I always say, like, I'll never run out of people to talk to on the show. It's kind of an ongoing thing. But how are you?
I'm well. Can't believe it's already mid-August or early August, and it just seems like the summer is going by way too fast.
Right, and kind of getting back to normal, right? I feel like with, you know, the coming out of the pandemic, it's like it's going even faster because you're almost catching up on lost time, right?
I agree. I think that's, a lot of people have said that. It's just, I think we're just jumping at everything. So, but it's good. I think we're kind of all emerging from that restful, whatever, that place that we were for a couple of almost 3 years. So I think in terms of just being able to connect with people again, and especially, you know, in our run and triathlon communities, just getting out to races is just such a joy.
For sure. And did you find that that time created some opportunities for you? I know, you know, it took away a lot from a lot of people, right, but also maybe opened up some possibilities.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I had just become a Lululemon ambassador at the end of summer of 2019. And so as soon as the pandemic really was in full force, I did get a lot more requests for outreach, not only from the Lululemon sort of community, but also from other communities, be corporate organizations or individuals wanting me to do virtual, just like meetups, just to share a little bit of our story. And then also just some sort of practical, let's say, tips and things in terms of protecting our own mental well-being. So I got really busy for, well, almost, but I guess a year and a half, very solid. And along with that, it was interesting because I know as a age group athlete for over 20 years, I've had a race on the card, like every year, at least one race. And I didn't have that. And I remember asking a coach, like, I don't know what my purpose is if I don't have an end goal. And she just basically said, well, think of yourself and think of the importance of not only being physically fit, but emotionally fit, which is really something that I, you know, obviously speak a lot about. But when it came to myself, it was different because I, you know, I just assumed that I would have a race and that sort of goal setting is really important to me and accountability. So I really had to change up the way I looked at outward rewards. I just had to really focus on just staying emotionally well, train as best I could, but it was a much different outcome, right, than we were used to. So that was a real change for me.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because you're in that space, you do talk about it, you know, mm-hmm. in your talks, and you're probably sharing that type of advice with others. But it's funny, sometimes we get lost in what we're doing, and sometimes those things, those pieces of advice are ones we should maybe follow ourselves, you know, like getting outside and just going for a run. And even though there was no racing, would help me to cope with everything going on, the lockdowns and all that. And
yeah.
I don't want to make this about a podcast about COVID, but the fact is that, like, it had a tremendous impact on people's mental and physical well-being. Mm-hmm. And surely there's some consequence to that too, you know? So
I think the isolation piece was really, I know just from our experience, isolation played a large role in our son Daniel's depression. And I think it becomes almost a tool, is to separate yourself from, you know, sort of the rest of your community, your family, whatever that looks like. And I think because we were forced into this isolation, you know, whether you were already struggling with a mental health condition or issue, or you were just, you know, you were alone or struggling, just, you know, because it was such a new space for you, that I think the one thing that did come, and I think it was a positive out of this shutdown and pandemic, is that the average person, I think, started to recognize the importance of protecting our mental well-being. So those, I think that's why I did so many sort of meetups online, because it was more about protecting our mental well-being, you know, without being, you know, necessarily struggling with a problem, but how, you know, what are the ways. And, you know, for me, going back to what you said, I had to listen to my own, what I was actually saying, and I had to actually live it, which was movement, is just get back to moving my body. Is, I always look at it as a healing act. So I think a lot of people were able to find, whether it was cycling or biking or walking or hiking, things that they could do where they didn't have to be in large groups. I think in a way that's actually probably for the better. I think we've got a lot of people outside now doing more things. So
yeah, which is great. Have you identified some things that people can do who aren't so active or don't care for being mm-hmm. physically active?
Well, I think, well, first of all, not spending tremendous amounts of time alone. I think that does lead to, it's just not a recipe for wellness. And I think if you can join any kind of community, whether it be knitting or like anything where you're socializing, you know, playing an instrument, doing art, there are so many ways to, you know, work on our cognitive health. Mine just happens to be movement, you know, running a triathlon. But I think you have to at least start with something that speaks to you. And a lot of people, the thought of running, they just can't even get their head around it. So I said, well, then why don't you look at maybe getting a friend to go for a coffee and go for a walk, go for a short hike. I think if you, you know, break it up into, you know, you don't have to be a runner, and, you know, you don't have to, you know, push your body to these incredible limits, but moving your body and doing it consistently to me is a really good recipe for like longevity in terms of your mental and physical well-being.
Yeah. It keeps the body in motion, and like, mm-hmm. Staying stagnant is never a good idea. Yeah. And it could be, you know, whatever it is. You know, I had some neighbors growing up. They were kind of like my grandparents in a sense, because my grandparents were in Toronto, but I know that every single day, and I used to see them, they used to go for a walk after dinner and do laps around our crescent, you know? Yeah. And you know, they were an older couple, and they were out there every single night, you know, it wasn't anything really strenuous or anything like that, but that alone in itself gave them, you know, some fitness and longevity, I'm sure. And
sleep better. you know, all those things that are.
And it's contagious too. Like people from the neighborhood would jump on and go, you know, go walking with them. And we used to love it. And, you know, I was an active kid. So just like biking around the block and catching up to them was fun, you know, stuff like that. So.
That's cool.
I do want to hear a bit about, you know, like you specifically, who you are, you know, where you grew up. Was being active always something that was part of your life? You know, how were you as a kid?
So I guess I grew up, I'm trying to think, we originally were sort of in the Port Credit area when I was a really, really little kid, and eventually moved to Toronto. But when I was very little, I remember the story was told that I was about 2 and a half or so, and I jumped on one of those big green electrical boxes and had parked my brother's bike beside me, and then I hopped on it.
No.
And you know, probably fell. I'm sure I crashed. But the point was, I just saw this bike and I saw movement and I saw other kids doing it. And so it was, you know, I think I've always been in motion and wanting to be in motion. But I think really I just was always out. I was a kid, like running around, like all kids, you know, did sort of. But I think it's more when I was in high school, I did all the sports. I did gymnastics. I did track and field. I did basketball. I wasn't really particularly good at a lot of them, but for some reason, when it came to track, I was proficient and track and field. And I remember the first time we had a track meet, my dad actually just showed up. Surprised me that he was there. And I think I was running the 200, and the feeling of just sort of sprinting around that track, you know, we romanticize it. It's been so long, but there was such a freedom. I think anything that had been ascribed to me at that point, growing up as a mixed race kid in Toronto, you know, when you're young, you're not carrying the weight of other stuff, but you sort of intuit it. I think it was like running around that track. I was just free. And then it turns out I like competition. So the idea of competing against your schoolmates, but also other schools, it was just such an elixir that I got hooked. And I think I will always say that that sort of those first experiences in competing and like, you know, being friends and then, but getting really gritty on the track to, you know, to try to win, those lessons have stayed with me all my life, outside of physical activities. I think they've just sort of, there's a mental toughness that comes with being a competitive person, competitive athlete, I guess, if you're able to, you know, sort of focus it into an area that's healthy. And I'm just so grateful that I had those opportunities when I was young, because I didn't really come back to running until I was 39.
Mm.
So that was a bit of a, you know, I had my kids and work and everything. And then when I, you know, I was inspired by a group of women in my neighborhood, and I just said, you know, can I join you? And I couldn't like run a K at the time. Like I I mean, because I hadn't run for so long. And they said, yeah, just get a water bottle, get a pair of good shoes and meet me next week and we'll start. So I started. So,
wow. And with that competition, you know, like as a kid, it can bring some different kinds of emotions where you're always able to keep it positive. Like have you always had a positive relationship to running, would you say?
I guess the way I look at it is yes to your question. You know, but we all have bad training days and hard races. And I think the one thing I hate it. You sort of have an expectation, and if you don't quite meet it, or you bonk or whatever happens, for some reason, you know, I'm able to look at the bad days, the bad training racing days as education. And for some reason, I've always been able, I'm still upset with myself, that's for sure. But I'm able to turn what is not what you expected into something, a learning opportunity or something that I can take to the next, you know, the next training block or the next race. And something that happened recently was, in 2021, I was training basically for a better part of a year. In 2019, I started training for Ironman California. Get to the race in October 21. We're in our wetsuits ready to start the race. And this torrential storm, these two weather systems hit each other. There's flooding, there's wind, they cancel the race, but we're literally at the start. And I remember thinking, wow, we've gone through, we're in a pandemic, basically. We're allowed to race and it's the weather that stopped us. And I thought, like, what was all that training for? Mm-hmm. And it took me a couple of days to process it because, we'd flown to California, spent all that money. Mm-hmm. My family came. But then I was, there's a lot of things I took from that race and that non-race day. And I sort of use them in my training for in 2022.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, because, and I like to call it, and I tell my athlete that it's practice. Like it's all just practice. When we were a kid, I played hockey, soccer, I went to soccer practice, I went to hockey practice. Like practice makes perfect, and you keep shooting until your shot gets really good. You keep skating until you keep mm-hmm. running until that improves too. There's no real difference. So yeah, I think one training or one day of practice is like just a small part of the big picture. And yeah, good on you for seeing that even on a non-race day,
Yeah, it was 3,000 of us were all basically standing there in shock. And it was, I can't even describe, it was a huge letdown, I have to say. It was a little bit of relief because we thought, how do we approach that water, which was already a down swim, like a downriver swim, which just makes it a little faster. But by the time we actually got to, we were driving back from the course, we were on top of a bridge and we could see the course, and the river was actually like a whirlpool. So no good would have come from that. And they finally recognized that at the last minute, but
yeah, it becomes a safety issue at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like Boston, I guess it was 2018.
2018. Yeah. I was there for that too.
Yeah. Okay, good. So we went through that pain together. Maybe that one should have been canceled too, but yeah. Anyways, don't know how I got through that one, but.
My focus on that day, I was in it like everybody else, and your feet are like gone, right? The only saving grace was I'd put Vaseline on my feet. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have like problems with my feet, but my hands were so frozen that I kept putting on their plastic bags from the aid stations, just saying, can I just, so I'd go aid station to aid station, putting on their plastic gloves. And I thought, I can't, people are dropping out of this race for a reason. And I was concerned of hypothermia because it was so cold. But anyway, we made it.
Oh my God. Yeah. The freezing hands I can definitely relate to. Just, that was a smart move on your part, grabbing those bags.
Yeah.
But, just getting gels out of my back pocket was almost impossible. And, the key there was to don't stop moving. That was
right,
the key.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. And also, I think you just keep checking in with your brain on those kind of hard days because to make sure that you're okay. I kept thinking, am I okay? Okay, here you go. But especially in the hot summer we've had, I did a race in July in Tremblant, and it was 37 degrees on the run. And I just thought, like, all my again, just like trying to stay warm in Boston, it was just basically trying to cool my body with ice. Mm. So like any idea of a goal race time was gone. It's just,
yeah, totally
survive.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why the break? You know, was it after school that you said, okay, now the running's done. Now I have to do something else. Are you very much like a person that is like all or nothing, or, you know,
I think just life changed. I think, you know, I had a period of time where I was doing a variety of different jobs when I was younger. You know, yeah, I think one of your questions you had sent me in your show notes was around, you know, when I was younger, sort of what were my life goals or sort of something in that area. And I kind of just feel like when I was young, say in my early 20s, I was just kind of floating around trying to figure out who I was as a human. I think I was just trying to figure out, I kind of went right away from athletics, to be honest. And it wasn't conscious. It was just the way it was. I ended up working for Ward Air at the time, which was an old airline that we used to love out of Canada. And you're doing a lot of travel, so you're not really looking after your physical health so much then. And, you know, then I got married, I had children. You get busy doing other life things. And I did get back to the gym. Once the kids were a bit older, I started to go, you know, back and do classes and kind of group workouts. But I had never really been drawn to run until I saw other women who were my age at the time. You know, they've got kids, but they're still squeezing out a morning run together. And just socially, it was huge just to be able to run with them and then start to be able to keep up with them and then just enjoy that conversation. We're all going through the same similar things, you know, raising our kids and life and whatnot. And it really started out as just this joyful space, you know, 2-3 times a week. And then I did a 5K, which is actually memorable because my first race was a 5K. And these same friends all went and they were running the 15K version of that. So, you know, I thought, okay, great. I signed up, get there. We all start. 5K goes in one direction, 15 in another. Somehow myself and another person got lost and ended up on the 15K, the end of the 15K course. So not only did we not run 5, we ran 7K. And they thought, the organizers and the people that were assembled at the finish line thought we were the elite runners coming in for the 15K women. And I'm like, I remember feeling like this is a moment. We just have to figure out the best way to manage what we're doing. And I said, just run through the tape and then we will get the organizers and tell them what happened. And to their credit, the Bread and Honey race out of Mississauga actually gave us credit to run the race the next year.
So, okay, nice.
And I did come back and I did place in both the 5 and the 15K. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah,
is that one still going?
No, I think they retired it, I want to say just before the pandemic.
Mm.
Or I think it was like around 19 that it was retired. So, I could be wrong a year or so. But what, you know, actually of that event, so, you know, I had my moment and, but being in the gym after and watching some of my friends, but also strangers, get up and collect these age group awards ignited something in me. And I thought, wow, as an athlete, we can still have these kind of moments where we can push ourselves to do certain things. And I hadn't had that since really I was on the track.
Mm.
And that was when I said, you know, and then I wanted to go further, and the same group of people said, okay, well, I run another K. And so I check in with them and I started running alone a little more. But I would always check in and tell them, you know, how I'd progressed. And then I was ready to do a half. And so we did the Toronto half, the old Toronto half marathon in the fall. And, you know, the goal was under 2 hours and I was like 1:59:58 or something. So,
hey, you got it.
And again, right, just like setting up a goal again was like a new thing for me. So it was just such a great organic kind of evolution. And I did not have a clue in those early days in 1999, 2000-ish, that the start of this running journey would change my life in ways that I have to write a book about it, because it's like, it's changed my last 23 years of my life in such phenomenal ways. And I would say that to anybody who's interested in checking out running, it will change a lot about your life.
And I was going I was going to ask about the group, like if you surpassed the group or if they evolved with you, and it sounds like they did, which helped, you know, helped keep the social aspect as well, keep it light too. And, you know,
at
a certain point, maybe you take it the next, I don't know if they all did Ironmans or stuff like that, but.
No, but it's interesting. So to your point, I went to Chicago, and a lot of them were there too. So, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I finished, that was all wonderful. And then I was really hooked, because the idea that you could actually run a marathon was like, I'll never forget that first finish line. And then, you know, came home and started scouring the libraries and bookstores for books on running, like not just how to, but like stories of runners. And just wanting to understand like the heart of a runner from other sources. And I basically trained myself to run my second, which was Toronto full. And it was there that I qualified actually to run Boston for the first time. So it was like they took me to a point. And then throughout my journey, they've encouraged me different, you know, people, some people have sort of left that whole group, but there's a couple of women that still, when they see something I've done, will, you know, just reach out and say, you know, like we always knew you had it in you kind of thing. But, so they're kind of always there encouraging, but it was just such this wonderful, you know, like I wouldn't have done that alone. And, like a shout out to my family for being at all these finish lines. But you think of it, it was that core group of women who, you know, I didn't really know them particularly well. We were just, some of them lived in our community. And then they're like, yeah, sure, join us, whatever. And then I just watched even their gait, because I was always slower than them. And I just sort of kind of just, you know, mimic what they did, practice what they did, and listen to their stories. And that was my beginning. And from that point, I was able to then find my way to my own training, I guess.
How'd you find the balance with, because you had your own life, right? You said that you life took over, you started a family, work, all this stuff, but then comes in the running and you're doing more and more and more and more. So how do you balance all those things?
That's a good question. Certainly doing the marathoning in those early days, I know that, you know, there was some, I think I got really focused on it. And sometimes you get so involved in what it is that you're doing, you don't always see everything else that's going on around you. So I think for some period of time, I probably had blinders on, and that was not good. But I always say my family's really good at recognizing when I'm kind of pushing it, and, you know, I'm not getting the sleep I should get, or I'm complaining of being tired or injury or whatever, and they'll sort of say, well, just pull it back. And they've kind of been that way, you know, my partner and my kids sort of always have said, like, you're doing too much. Mm-hmm. And then it may hurt a bit because they're telling the truth, but I will say, though, that when I look now at training for Ironman and half Ironmans, being a runner, not that it's easier, but because you're focusing on the one specific sport and you're cross training with it, but it is, I do find that the IM training is really, if you really do take away from the other parts of your life. I don't find that the same with marathoning or run training. I feel like I can balance it better. And obviously my requirements are less. The kids are all grown, and so I have more time. But I don't know that I always balanced it well. I guess maybe that's the answer to your question. I learned too.
Yeah, and you're right, like the Ironman training, like I haven't gone back to that since I did my first full in 2016 and then did another in 2017, but it's a totally different level of commitment that you have to make, because the running is great. You can still run a significant amount, but you do it from your door. I think exactly. that makes a big difference, because you know, you have to go to a pool. You have to maybe drive out to get a good stretch of road. Sometimes, you know, we're not all fortunate to have that right outside our backyard. Mm-hmm. And the commuting plus the training creates like this half day event, you know, and
you're right.
I can imagine with a family, it's really, really tough. But yeah,
I don't know too many people The majority of people that I know are their kids are sort of grown before they really undertook such a long distance event, because I really don't talk about being distracted. I don't know how you do either well. If you're running to pick your kids up and taking them to activities, having to get food, life would not be pleasurable.
Yeah, a little bit everywhere, a little squirrely maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to also ask you about, the fact you said the number 39, and that stuck in my head, coming into this, in this sport, endurance sport at that age. Mm-hmm. Like the reason why I went into Ironman, I was telling you about this a little bit before, was because, and they were actually Lululemon ambassadors as well, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. Kat and Kev, they were, my coaches at the time when I met them almost immediately, and then, continue to be great friends and mentors to this day. But they also started around that time, and got into, this endurance world doing triathlons, relays and stuff. And they found so much pleasure in that and getting back in fitness. But I think what makes their story so compelling and yours as well is that a lot of people, as they get older, do the opposite. They say, oh, I can't do that anymore. I'm getting old. I am this, I am that, because of the number of years that you've been alive, And I don't see things like that, because I'm talking and connecting with people who started much older. So, why start at that age? And what do you tell people who say, like, ah, oh, it's too late for me?
Oh, gosh. That's a big question.
Yeah.
I think, I look at it this way. I mean, I one thing about running, especially for women, is we peak later in terms of running. Like, I'd say even competitive age group runners. That's specifically with running. And I just happened to luck out and start, 39, 40 is really when I started racing, we'll say, in my early 40s. I just think, the upside is, because I didn't do it for so long, I wasn't injured. So that's a good thing. So if you're older and you've kind of taken care of yourself to some degree, picking up running, you don't have those sort of, if I was a runner, say from high school, and I didn't stop, I would probably have a lot of issues. But I did have a bit of a break. And so when I got into it, and I've really been fortunate, just other than having some health issues that are sort of, don't just say genetic, but they're like, I have colitis, I have spondylitis. So, but those things are sort of separate, but I don't have like physical injuries because I've been, practicing too hard and things like that. And I just think the beauty of being physically active in something you love, you can do it for life. And how great is that to know something that you love, or you can be part of it, even if it's not in the physical sense of running it, but maybe you're coordinating something, or you're volunteering at a race, or you're creating outreach for local youth. There's so many parts to what it is that could be your passion that will help you physically and emotionally, but that you can also give to others. I think that's a pretty good recipe for, just feeling good about yourself throughout all of your whole life. As I said, I think people have all different things that they go to. Ours just happens to be running, and moving our body. But I think, I know I'm slower, but I still like doing the hard training. Like I don't see my age because I'm still training hard, and I'm still doing the thing I love. And the fact that I can do that is the reward. So, the medal, qualifying for this or that, it's really, that's just a byproduct of remaining in the sport and doing something that I feel so passionate about.
Yeah. And that's so true too. I do agree with you there. Like, playing, team sports growing up, allows you to be competitive, but then once you hit a certain age, you can't really do that anymore unless it's like, well, let's use hockey as an example, like a beer league. Mm-hmm. Or just a recreational league, I should call it. I don't know who's listening. And, if you're not a drinker or whatever, you don't have to drink the beer.
No, that's right.
But that's actually one thing I do like about running and triathlon is that I can still like race, enter like a competition. Mm-hmm. And I think like it's one of the unique sports where you're able to do that. And also race with like some of the best athletes in the world.
Yeah,
too,
true. That's so true.
Which is also really exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you ever imagine that you'd get to these distances, this point? Like, was it just like you kept wanting more, or like were you always thinking, yeah, BQ, Ironman, like, yeah, those are things.
No, not at all. I honestly never. It's I think my story is a story of so many others, and I can't say you fell into it, because there was an intentional part, on my part to do what I was watching these other women do. But then the more I got into it, and I recognized what, people that were really efficient at running and, not necessarily were winning, but that they were in it for a long time and they had lots to share. I just loved that aspect of it too. So it was just really this, when did I think about Boston? I think probably, so I did Chicago, and that was like, I don't know, 4 hours, doesn't even matter, 4:43. Mm-hmm. I thought, great, I finished. That's like amazing. And I didn't have any expectation, because how would I, I've never ran 42.2. And then in 2001, I thought, oh, you know what? I'm not going to necessarily qualify for Boston, but I'm going to be much faster. And I did. And I literally got a book and I took their training program for however many weeks. And I think it was like 4 months over time. And I got to the start line and I just basically did what the book said. there was 2K to finish. And I'll never forget this. And I had it, like, there was nothing left in the tank. And I remember meeting this other woman who was right. We were sort of, she was just ahead of me and I kind of caught up to her and we were running side by side. And she says, we're going to do this. And I said, I just don't know if I can. And she said, no. And that's when you would run into Queen's Park and in Toronto, for those of you that are familiar with the area. And she said, no, we're going to do it. We're good. I said, I just need to stop and get water. She says, get water. And then we're just going. And I stayed sort of right behind her, struggled a bit more. She stopped to make sure I'd kept up. And we ended up crossing the finish line, holding each other's hand, and it was a stranger. And we mm-hmm. both qualified for Boston. Mm. And it was just, I think we exchanged emails back in the day, or we exchanged some sort of conversations back in the day. I then saw her at a couple races, and we always had that like memory of just how special that. I think once you, it sort of builds, right? So you train and you realize that you can depend on yourself. You need the support of others. There's no question. I don't think we do any of this without a lot of support. But in terms of just that, you can depend on your training, on yourself, on your ability to show up for yourself. And then when you actually achieve a goal, then that's even, more strength, I guess. It's just this ability to say you can trust yourself. And I think maybe, and then of course I just, continue running races. And, I obviously didn't always qualify for Boston in a marathon, but, when I really was going for it, then I would totally change up my training and really push the envelope. And especially with Boston, it's age graded. So, the longer you stay in it, the more chances you have of getting to Boston too. So.
Yeah, the easier it is to get in. I remember meeting somebody, a gentleman at the first Ironman I went to the, what are they called, the roll down, or
yes, yeah, yeah.
When they give the tickets for the world championship in Kona, and I wasn't gonna make it, but I wanted to go just to see what that was about. And you see some amazing stuff, like
right, yeah,
a ticket falling to somebody who had no business getting one, like who was like 19th in his age, and I met the guy. I think he was 70 something at the time, and he was with his wife and. He got his ticket to go back, and he had been many times. And I said, so how does it feel? You got any advice for me? He said, at my age, You don't have to beat the competition. You just have to outlive them. That's what he told.
100%.
And he's so true. It's so true, you know? I think he finished just at the cutoff or whatever, but, you know, he was one of two guys.
Exactly.
That compete in that age. So,
yeah, I mean, listen, I saw that at the Toronto Triathlon Festival. You know, I don't think they had an age category, but like I'm in the 60 to 64 age category. And I didn't even, you know, you don't know how many people are in your age category. So I, sort of after I'd packed up and everything and looked at my phone, I recognized that I actually won, but there was only one person. And yet there was another person that I saw on the course with that number, on her calf, but it was like, okay, this is weird. I actually won, but then there's no one else. But I guess that still makes me a winner, so I'll take it.
Yeah, you're guaranteed top three.
You know? That's right.
that's pretty great. Did the, like, you kind of started with the running and then got into triathlon? Like, where was the, you know, similar to, like, how did you get into running? How did you fall into triathlon?
So that was in 2008. I had heard of this coach not far from me, and he had like a group training session. So I reached out, and so I ended up, you know, in 2008, just doing training with his group. I was always, I've never been a strong swimmer, as most triathletes say, but I really
same.
Was.
Yeah,
I was like a noodle swimmer. And I wasn't thinking about being in a race situation. I wanted to get into a group situation. I wanted to learn how to bike better because I knew I had more control over the biking than I necessarily would over the swimming. And then 2009, we lost our son to depression and untreated depression and suicide. And so our lives just stopped. I think the idea of doing anything other than just, you know, getting up was beyond my thinking. And so I just left, like, I just stopped everything. The only thing I didn't stop was running. I would run, you know, and I don't even know what the distance is. So I just get out and run. And over time and over like a lot of work, a lot of doing the work and grief. And I think it was just the reality is, would I ever be able to go back to even trying a triathlon? And I did because I had signed up for the half Ironman in Muskoka. I was supposed to do it the year that Daniel died. And because I had talked to him about this bike I was getting, and I talked to him about swimming, and he'd always make jokes because I wasn't a real swimmer, I thought I owe it to his legacy, to my son, to finish that race. And so it took me till 2015, and I got to that start line. And the day that I crossed that finish line, I got through the swim, and the day that I, you can hear my voice mm-hmm. because it'll never not be beautiful and difficult at the same time. Nice. I crossed the finish line with him and the rest of my family waiting it. And so I felt like it was my new gift. And I thought, I'm going to continue this because where crossing a marathon finish line or crossing finish lines in running was my opportunity to learn about who I am and learn about strength. Going through loss that we as a family endured and then being able to rise again, that's resilience. And I recognized that I had that. And I thought, I'm going to use it. And the rest of my life, as long as I can not only race and train and do these incredible things, I really want to be able to share with others that we're all going to suffer and life sucks, but it's our ability to take those punches and find a way back. Mm-hmm. And that is really the gift.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, I can't imagine what that must be. Be like to lose a child. You know, it's something that you never wish anybody has to go through, and it doesn't get any easier as mm-hmm. you go through life. You know, that's always something that's going to stay with you. But with that, you know, you can draw some power too, and some you know, there's ways to move forward. And I totally agree with what you said. Like, there's stuff happens in everyone's life. You know, we all go through hardship. Life is not all roses. And yeah, it's how do you rebound, you know, and move forward as the, that's the struggle.
I think the year I had run for about 10, almost 10 years prior to that. And I think I will say that being a long distance runner, being out on the run, dealing with hardships and adversity, helped me in a very unique way to deal with loss. Mm-hmm. And then my ability to just start running like a couple days out was such a healing activity that I never forgot that.
Do you like, I know a lot of people use the sport as a vehicle to share a message. Is that now part of your mission as well?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I did a thing on Instagram actually, beginning of this year. And it was like a 4-part series, I guess. And really what I wanted to try to share is the idea of the healing act of movement, whatever that looks like for you. And then, I look at running as running itself as an act of self-expression and compassion. And I wrote in this piece on Instagram, when we push our body, we challenge our mind, gathering strength and fortifying ourselves for life. And I feel like that is my experience. You can insert whatever activity that looks like for you. But if you have things in your life that push you outside of yourself, you can be darn sure you probably have some deep well of courage inside that you can draw from.
Yeah. Well, it's a really nice thing. And that series too is very, it's great as well. It's amazing the work that you do now, around that and raising awareness and like using, even though it's hard to talk about, you know, to share your experience so maybe you can help somebody else, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I guess my calling at this point.
Yeah. So what are some things that you share in your talks that you talk to people about? What are some of the messages that you try and convey to others maybe going through something similar? Because I mean, there is also a community in that, you know, in the struggle, people who have lost other people, or their kids too. I mean, this is something that, you know, it's, unfortunately people go through that, you know. I'm sure you've connected with others.
Exactly. I think my whole reason for sharing our story is to try to help, especially young people, understand that their disease is not who they are. It is simply a disease, just like a physical health condition. It's just trying to help them help people understand it, and particularly people around someone who may be struggling to have a sense of, not necessarily signs, because everybody's going to be unique at, you know, what that sort of signs and symptoms look like. But, you know, there's some classic hallmark things, and I try to share that in my talks, like losing weight, like being very disinterested in just generally life and activities, behavioral changes, sleeping, eating, all those kinds of things, of not attending school. It was a big one for us. But, you know, when you look at one or two of these things, one of them on their own doesn't necessarily mean that your family member is struggling, but, you know, if I look back now and I look at them all in totality, I mean, that was, Daniel was in a catastrophic period of time. And we just had simply, you know, almost 14 years ago, we didn't have any knowledge about mental health and mental wellness. So we didn't even have like conversations around these things that are much more normalized. So that, I think, why I do share, whether it's writing or speaking, is just to really, you know, we talked about raising awareness a long time ago. We have awareness. It's how do we identify individuals who are isolated, who have sort of checked out from their day-to-day life? And, you know,
or coworker, what, you know, how do we understand some of those things that we might be able to support them, and really just ask the question. I mean, you know, beyond how are you doing, but if you are really concerned, you ask someone, you know, do you have thoughts of suicide? Have you got a plan? Like, these are the things we were, you know, I didn't even know about, but, you know, even when we started to get awareness, we weren't asking those questions because we were afraid that that might trigger somebody. Well, now we know it's important to actually ask those questions. So I think more information that I receive and the more new research that comes out, I just try to share it where I can. And share it with the idea of hope. Like, the people don't have to have our experience. And so I want to get to try to share our experience so that people won't have to sort of live our journey. And it's a day-to-day journey, and it's difficult, and it will never, put this way, it affects everything you do, because no matter the joy even that you feel, there's always that sort of, it's always tinged with that feeling of loss.
Is that something you're doing full time now? Is this what you do as you're for work?
So this is, besides, you know, sort of still being a mom to two wonderful daughters, I think it's pretty much since 2010. 2009, I actually started writing, and then I wrote a book in 2014. So I've been advocating since 2009. Pretty much, you know, as you know, wherever I'm needed, I go, you know, to most things. I've gone to the U.S. to speak, you know, wherever, and if it feels that it's appropriate, I'll certainly, you know, go wherever to not only share our story, but to share a message of hope, because I think we can, with understanding, with education, we can change outcomes. And I, you know, my focus is because our experiences with Daniel was 23, but it's really for any age. But I, you know, as I said, our experience, I'm not an expert. I just know from our experience, and particularly young men, I think, you know, young men and women all will struggle, all will suffer with mental health conditions or challenges. But there also can be sort of episodic, and they can be sort of triggered by certain things that are happening in their lives. In other words, this is a part of a period of time. And I think that's the important thing to note, that whatever you're going through right now does not necessarily have to be what you're looking at for the next year. This is where you're at right now. And then to that, when a person is in a suicidal state, it is, you know, moments to hours. It's not, you know, it will pass. It's getting to the person and understanding, and that's sort of medically, you know, we need to get professionals to be dealing with that part as well as trying to treat the actual clinical health condition. They have to understand what they're seeing in front of them, and that's, you know, that goes to funding, that goes to so many other things, but it's a massive issue, but we have to try. We have to try to save lives.
Yeah.
And yes, it's my job.
You're not going to save all of them. You know, you can't, it's impossible, I think, to save everyone, but you can save people. Like that's the thing. And mental health is the tough one, because you can't, there are signs, but it's, you can't see it, you know, and that's,
yeah, absolutely. It's, yeah.
So yeah, that also becomes a big challenge. And you know, like you were saying about yourself, you know, and I think we all go through it, you know, when you're in your 20s, if I look back at myself, like, it's a really, really tough time. You know, you're coming out of school. What do I do with my life? I know for me, I wanted to make my own way. You know, I wanted to show that I could become an adult, you know, and you know, that's get the job. And, you know, what were my goals back then? You know, like, I thought maybe I'd have a family at, you know, late 20s, or I don't know. Like, I'm not, I'm nowhere close to that right now, because just life happens, you know?
Right.
But I think there's just so much pressure on kids, you know, growing up in their teens and early 20s, that's a really crucial time to make it happen, when there's no rush, you know? Like, I think just from from a life standpoint, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of pressure, but you know, when you put it in hindsight, in terms of someone's entire life, like, wow.
It's a moment and it'll pass. It's just, you know, it's too late for us, mm-hmm. but it's not too late for someone else. And I think that's really, you know, put it down to a few words, that's really, you know, and we can do so much more now because we have so much more understanding and more tools available. What we don't have necessarily is access to, you know, care for someone who's dealing with a major depression, who's been diagnosed. So it's, you know, and the other thing is too, and I because I've met so many people who are living with a family member who is really, really struggling or been hospitalized, is they just don't have care. And, you know, unless you can pay for it and you can afford to pay for psychiatry is really difficult because it's hard to actually access them. There's so few, but psychologists and programs that are out of reach for a lot of people. So how do, you know, so it really is up to family members to be our own advocates and do everything we can. You know, there's no, because we never actually entered the system. That's a whole other area of frustration that we never even got a chance to get there. But mm-hmm. just speaking to other parents, it's just, I mean, they don't know from one day to the next, you know, about their child. And it's just really, Daniel had physical health conditions. He had anaphylaxis and asthma, which, you know, so he was allergic to a lot of food, and he became a really good cook, I guess, as a result. So our focus for most of his life was keeping him safe and away from like offending foods. We were never focused on his mental health and what actually being an anaphylactic kid did to his, you know, affected him, and in ways that, you know, I remember asking one of our specialists at the time, like, will this have like an impact on Daniel, the way he looks at things? And they said, oh, you're doing a great job. And I know that they meant that, like, he was safe. We were doing a good job because we were keeping him out of the hospital. But, you know, there were so many more layers to that, you know, and we didn't, the doctors at the time, I guess they just didn't have the research. But you can't say that today. Now we know there's a direct link to a physical health condition to your mental well-being. So, you know, even armed with just that is a starting place.
For sure. And that leads me to kind of something I was thinking about as you were talking, but the, like how far it's come, like in a positive sense, how far mm-hmm. have we come in terms of the resources over the last, let's say, 10 years?
It's huge, like a gulf. It's from not even, you know, when I first started writing, I was, you know, I was really worried that I would, you know, say certain things, and that's like, now you just say it. You don't, like, as an example, in an obituary, you know, we wrote, you know, how great Daniel was and, you know, his life, and we didn't speak to his passing. Today they do, because people want others to know that this is the reality. You know, that's just one flashpoint, but there are so many more online resources, Kids Help Phone. These online Crisis Canada, they are being backed because we don't have necessarily a great mental health support system in our, like, in our regional and provincial and federal governments. But some of these other resources have come on and are getting backed by large corporations to be able to support people when they are in crisis. So there are tools out there. But, you know, if you think of it, when there's an emergency or there's a crisis, like, what do you do in that instant? You know, so it's having this information very readily accessible to people online. And I know, like, my website, lynnkeen.ca, I've got several resources for people that are dealing with, obviously, a mental health crisis, but also those that are bereaved as well. So, because I know for us as a family, we had zero to turn to. When we were looking, you know, we had a grief counselor, but there was really no online guide. Like, you've lost a family member, but this particular loss has its own weight. and journey that another loss may not have. And so I think, you know, we just have to be really sensitive and the things that are out there. And so on my website, I do have some things that I've sort of put together from other resources and captured them together. So if anybody wants to have a look, there is help there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, and it's great that you share that with others and anybody who follows your story or mm-hmm. is listening to this, you know, who needs resources can, you know, it's a nice place to start anyways.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, it's just a starting point. Exactly.
And are there particular foundations or anything that you're a part of that you can share that are good to support? Like,
one of the groups that I was participating in a project out of the Trillium Hospital, it's the Trillium Partners, their hospital group, was Project Now, and it was to eliminate suicide by 2027. Because of the pandemic, there has the connective issue, I guess, of that group has, you know, it's had to slow down a bit. So, but that's kind of the ultimate, right? It's like if you look at cancer can be beaten, this is where, you know, changing minds around, you know, changing outcomes around suicide. And I think that's something that I will continue to participate in once they get, you know, up and going again. The Unsinkable Story Sharing Platform on Instagram, they have a youth platform. Unsinkable Youth is fantastic because it's all story sharing. And they also have Unsinkable Stories for Adults. And they cover all sorts of challenges that we face in life. And again, the youth platform is great because it really meets young people where they are. And it's peer-to-peer sharing these stories. So those are, you know, jack.org is, again, another fantastic resource. I've never actually worked with them, but I've just watched them grow over the years. We had the same experience. The founder started jack.org, and it's all over North America now. And it's peer-to-peer in schools so that, you know, the kid sitting across from you understands what the kid sitting across from him is looking like, and he's sort of recognizing certain signs and just also ability and awareness on how to actually help support peers, your peers around you. So I'm trying to think other, the Kids Help Phone is, again, another great resource. In the States, there's a variety of different projects, or I guess project organizations, that I've gotten involved with over the years. Again, those are on my website. You know, there's lots of information out there, and I as I said, I just try to self of the latest information so that when asked, you know, I can at least share that with someone else who's looking.
Yeah, and we'll be happy to share that too in our show notes and provide links and for more information too. So
great. That'd be fabulous.
Yeah, so that we can, you know, connect others with what you're saying, and anybody looking for resources can definitely have a look at that too. So
I did it. Go ahead. I was just going to mention also, I did a TED Talk in 2014 that still stands today in terms of relating to youth. So that would be it's just that the topic is we need to talk about suicide prevention. Right. And it's been shared quite widely. And I think that's just really very basic, but it's very straightforward. And hopefully it's gotten out there to a lot of people.
You said endurance sports has changed your life. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the running specifically, I mean, I think just in terms of health and the expectation of the health, the level that I have, what I expect of my body at the age of 64 is probably very different had I not gone into running and endurance specifically. But I think it's one of those things. Why I say it changed my life is because it not only gave me this wonderful space to express myself, sort of the self-expression and an activity that I loved. It also introduced me to some of the greatest people. I mean, I was able to, with another partner, start a race that supported kids up in Muskoka who were living with cancer. And it supported a camp experience for them so that they could just be kids. And we ran that for 17 years, just retired during the pandemic. But like being able to do something that you love and have others do it with you, and then actually do it in support of such an important cause. You know, every summer, every August long weekend, we had like 500 to 700 people show up. You know, they'd either raise money or they'd run, and all the race receipts went to this charity. That, it, you know, something that I got so much from, and my running partner got so much from, we were able to actually give back into community. And I, you know, in terms of life, I think those are the kinds of things that we look for, is to how do we make someone else have a better experience, or, you know, it's beyond a better day. Like, how do we change someone else or support them in a way that they require? And for us, it was, you know, it was pretty simple. Create a race because we love running, and bring less people together. And we supported that cause. So that meeting Bono at the finish line of my first Toronto marathon.
Wow.
Which was crazy. yeah. I mean, that's a story in itself. But yeah.
Was he running it?
They'd done a concert, and they were leaving, and him and the Edge were in a car, and someone said, "Hey, you know, check this out." And I walked over, and I'm standing, and I'm still in my race, like post-race wear. So I'm a little sweaty. And I blurted out, "I qualify for Boston." So he took my parking pass and drew a flower, asked me my time, and then handed it back. And I, to this day, I have it. I'll send you the picture of it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And then a couple years later, we were sitting in a hotel lobby, and in walks the Edge and Bono.
No.
And we had another conversation. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he necessarily remembered, but he said he did.
Yeah. I mean, he sees so many people, right? Yeah,
exactly. Like,
yeah. That's the whole, but that's still a cool story. Yeah. That's awesome. You never know what you're going to see on the race course. And some, you know, some celebrities have done triathlons and stuff like
exactly,
that too.
Yeah. So. And just coaches and mentors, and like some of my best friends are training partners. So I think it's just that those are like the small things that, you know, you do it consistently, they will change your life. And that's the way I look at it. It's not like, wow, this big thing happened. It's like doing something, doing it consistently, trusting in yourself, and then doing it with people that you share a common sort of bond. That's just, those are all good things. And so I do think that being the endurance, you're out with people a lot longer. So you're connecting on a, you know, for like 5 hours or 4 hours or something like that. So I just think for that, again, that's just my experience too. You know, that's for me, but it's, I think you can take it and insert any activity.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And I've made some great friends through running too. And I, you know, like you say, triathlon's great because you can spend 4 or 5 hours on a bike, and you know, you got lots of time to chat. So
lots of butter tarts.
Yeah, you really get to know somebody through movement, you know, and that's what also keeps things fun too. So what would you say is your greatest accomplishment?
Swimming 3.9K. I think I would have never, even when I had done a few halves, I just half Ironman, I did not ever think that was something in my body that was possible. But literally, you know, train, got in the water at Lake Placid, which, by the way, is probably one of the best swim courses in Ironman, because you've got an underwater cable. So you basically are following the cable for 'cause you do the swim twice. So basically you're following the cable, two loops. And I remember my daughter said to me after the race, "I couldn't believe you, because you swam, you got out, and there was an underwater diver right where the exit. I grabbed a cup of water, waved at this guy, and then got back in the water." And she said, like, in no planet, I could ever see that ever happening. And I actually, it was, again, it's one of those things where you go, I trusted in my training, and I trusted in, as you say, practice makes perfect. And that to me was a perfect swim.
Uh-huh.
So, for
anybody who doesn't like know triathlon or Ironman distance, like when you're in the water, often these are in open lakes and oceans. So directionally speaking, like for an amateur, like I was the same way. Like I learned how to swim that distance later on in life when I decided to tackle it. But directionally, you always have to look up because you don't know, like, you'll get pulled in one direction or another depending on current and wind and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So having a cable there must be nice because you never have to look.
the only problem is it's such a hard bike and run course. The run course beats you up. But the swim is beautiful. Yeah. And if I could just say my greatest accomplishment is my kids. But in terms of activity, I would say getting through that barrier told me that I could probably do anything if I continued to practice and focus. I think that goes for anybody who really says, okay, I write it down and then just consistently practice and train and you'll get there.
Is that the best, I was going to ask you, is that the best advice you could give somebody looking to take on a new distance challenge or going from a 5 to a 10 or?
Yeah, I'd say that's, I'd say firstly is try to, if you can, connect with others. I think it kind of keeps you accountable. And it's also, I think you get better results. You'll stick with it. I think if you are, if you can at least match up with one other person or get a crew. And if you can't, then no matter what, I would say is just basically like you were saying 5 or 10. And if you wanted to say get up to the half or even full marathon, is just, don't do 5 and then do a marathon. I think you want to just kind of go through the process and try to maybe do, I'm talking average age groupers, everybody's from different levels. But I'd say for the average age grouper, starting with, those shorter distances and then building, I think there's so much to be said for building that foundation of running and staying uninjured, going from the, a shorter distance and then ratcheting it up to much longer. I think you risk a lot of injury. And I think it's too hard. I think you can lose, personally speaking, I think it just chunking it up into like did a 5 and then I did a 15 and then a half and then a 30 and then a full. Nothing looked like it was like crazy out of reach. You know what I mean? I chunked it out. So I was able to say, okay, I've got here. What is it going to take to get to there? And I think that and smiling at the finish lines and always tying your shoes a double knot is also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's really good advice. And one that I can say I followed through my running career, let's call it. Yeah, it's like everyone's in a rush to get to like the marathon, but if you want to run a good marathon, you got to be able to do all those other distances before. So why not perfect those a little bit?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
No, I was going to say another tip was, and I learned this from my triathlon friends, is they call it a high density bag for triathlon. And what that is, it was like a running gag, but it's just like a grocery bag, like a plastic grocery bag that you put under your wetsuit if it's a windy day, because you don't have any kind of, if it's a windy day and you come out of the water, you'll be freezing, right? So that just blocks the cold. So, and then you could just rip it out when you get warm. So it's
never heard of that.
Yeah. And we were joking, like, you can make these and sell them to triathletes.
Well, we'll buy anything.
Yeah. They'll try just about anything, right? So
I heard of a plastic bag to get your wetsuit on, but I've never heard of wearing them underneath. But actually,
underneath. Makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you can try that one. That will check out for sure. What would you say endurance sports has taught you?
I think I would say, Justin, it's taught me to trust in the process, because it's long and it's not instant rewards. It has taught me to be patient with the practicing, the training, and not looking for a reward, but just sort of trust in the process. I would say that's kind of, I think the best way I can put it is just to believe in what you're doing, to want it, and then to, when you've decided to go for it, to believe in that process. That, I think, sets yourself up for sure completing something, but also possibly for, reaching a goal like you never thought you could. So.
Yeah. What's something maybe you have accomplished that you never thought you could possibly do?
Ironman.
Yeah.
Me
too.
Honestly, I'll back it up one and say, never, you know, when I started the run journey, I really never thought that Boston was something I could ever, you know, get into that orbit. Because I just truly love running. But when you do get hooked and you do, you know, you can't help it. You start to, you know, you look at your times, you look at your splits. What do I need to do this? So you do spend a lot of time on data, especially I'd say early on in one's career or mm-hmm. in the sort of mid to early part. But yeah, I'd say Boston was probably number one. And then also, and then later, as you think, I got it, Boston was 2002, was my first one. And then I did Ironman at 2018. So that's a big space of time that I could, you know, compete in an Ironman, you know, and I say compete. I did compete. I certainly didn't get, well, I'd actually go on the podium, but I think it's because there was only 11 people in our group. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Just outlive them, you know?
Exactly. That's my, I actually never thought about it. So I didn't even go to the roll down and I heard about it after. So,
oh
yeah, but they sent me, I guess, anybody that I, you know, made the podium got a big jar of maple syrup from Lake Placid. So I did get that.
Nice. At an American race, you get the Canadian specialty.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So after all these years of practice and process and racing, what does it all mean to you?
Oh, that's a tough one. Because you live it, it's just hard to separate it. But I think I guess it's a really good way to look at it right now is I'm on a bit of a break right now before starting a new training block, and it gives me purpose. It's such a purposeful thing to do, and I think if I'm asking and answering your question correctly, I think I know the purpose behind why I move my body, and if I don't do it, I feel a bit lost. So I think because it actually impacts and reflects other parts of my life. So I think does that answer? I think it's just one of those, it's just become so ingrained in who I am that it's just part of my day-to-day to be in movement. And right now that just happens to be walking my dog and just going for long walks. But regardless, I think the idea, the act of being in movement is a, I've said it before, but it is truly a healing activity. It's a healing act. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that.
Yeah, totally. No.
Sums up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, everyone's answer, I ask it to every one of my guests just mm-hmm. for the record, but, and everyone's answer is different, but I think the important thing or takeaway is that a lot of people think like when I'm talking to somebody about it, they're looking at me like, you run every day, you know, and that can be intimidating for a lot of people. But then when I see that look on their face, I chalk it up to like, you know, go walk for 15 mm-hmm. minutes
exactly.
or 10 minutes. Or if you want to get into running, go, you know, run for 2 minutes and walk for five.
Exactly.
Or
yeah.
Like you can get there if you really want to, but it doesn't have to be this crazy thing. You know, you don't have to go and sign up for a marathon.
Right. Exactly.
I think like we're driven maybe by those races for, you know, to have on our calendar, but it can just be a lifestyle change that's going to help you mm-hmm. feel better, lose weight, or whatever it might be that you're after, or just live healthier, live like everyone can add fitness, you know? And mm-hmm. like, even me, I'm sure you feel that way too. Like how fit can I be at 38, or how fit can you be at, you know, 60? I don't want to.
64. I'm good.
64. So
I'm great.
You know what I mean? Like, if we just talk about fitness and like we're blessed to have these bodies that move and we're able to do stuff for as long as we can anyways, you know, just got to be grateful for that and appreciate it. And yeah. Anyways,
that's I think gratitude for this one body and this one mind is for sure like my motto. And I think what has helped me through the years is, because I have this downtime right now, I'm going to really go hard on strength training. like in a way that you can't do it when you're training for three different disciplines. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the next 6 months, that's kind of my goal. And it's like you're always learning and you're always open to, you know, what's possible. But the byproduct is great physical and mental health. But I think it's that journey to keep learning. And I think if I answer your question again, what has this endurance journey done for you? I think it's the idea that you can keep doing, you can keep learning, and be, you know, your best self.
For sure. Absolutely. So what's next for you?
I'm hoping to, I'm going to register in September for Boston, for 2023. I think it's like the next year now.
Okay.
And then, I'm waiting to get the confirmation of the world's qualification to do the Olympic distance, at the World Championships next year in Spain. Oh. And that's in the fall. So that will be a first in very triathlon, cool. No doubt. So yeah, like the girl that couldn't swim. So
exactly. You know,
it's just possible. So, and I'm working on some writing, that I would like to compile one day into a book on basically the runner's way kind of thing. You know, it's informed so much of my, you know, the last 20 odd years that it's, there's a lot of stuff in that I'd like to, a lot of things I'd like to share. So hopefully that'll be something I'll be working on.
Looking forward to it for sure. And your website, I guess, is where people can contact you. Instagram,
find you? Twitter, Instagram, my website for sure. And, yeah, I mean, I found you guys on Instagram and love the variety of guests that you have on and learned a lot from what you guys do. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate your time today and sharing with us all aspects of life and what you're doing for mental health, but also doing for yourself. And yeah, I admire that work. You know, I admire the work that people put in to help others and,
thank you.
You know, share their experiences. So I can't wait for people, you know, hopefully people learn something from this conversation today. And yeah, I wish you all the best.
All right. And you too. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thanks. Take care.
You too.
Bye. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. I was looking for a tasty, vegan-friendly alternative to traditional gels, and Exact Energy Bars passed the test. Now available in Canada and the US, you'll definitely want to try them on your next long run. And they're offering you 15% off your order when you use the promo code LARUNDOWN. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to leave your reviews for us on Apple Podcasts or message us directly on Instagram with your comments, feedback, and suggestions for future guests. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a WRG production, produced by Leslie Woods and Forrest McKay. All the amazing graphics you see on social media are created by Ryan Bondi, and the show is hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.